For Thomas Matters Radio, this is Mark Collier, sponsor today, Omega Processing Solutions, always a sponsor on For Thomas Matters Radio. I'm going to read a recommendation from Patty Horton, who is a business manager at Horton Family Dental. And this is what she said about Omega Processing Solutions. When we were considering switching to Omega Processing for our credit card processing, our account rep spent a lot of time explaining the savings we could expect and why. He explained how to read the monthly statements and what the process would be for switching. He answered all of my questions patiently and completely. The process could not have been easier. And that is not an outlier. That happens all the time at Omega Processing Solutions. So if you're a small business and you need a different way to collect credit card payments or anything like that, you should be calling Omega Processing Solutions. They're on Alexandria Pike. You can reach them at 866-888-9724, 866-888-9724, or locally at 442-8100. Let's go. So today on the show, we have Ken Bowman. Ken is a city councilman right now, and how many terms is it?
I'm in my second.
Second term, seeking a third, and also an Omega Processing Solutions customer.
That's true. I have been for years a satisfied Omega customer.
Yep. And you are with, you own your own business. You're a small business owner.
Bowman's Framing.
Bowman's Framing. Everybody knows what that is.
Okay, good. I'd like to hope so.
Give me a little plug for Bowman's Framing. What do you do? What do you specialize in?
Well, we can frame anything and everything, industrial, commercial jobs, regular residential jobs, shadow boxes, whatever is needed. We also serve as an art gallery representing lots of good local talent.
And you have a Trust Me sale going on. What's a Trust Me sale?
We do have a Trust Me sale. It's mostly my old regulars have been taking me up on this offer, but it's kind of hard to beat. The concept is you bring in whatever it is that you have in mind to frame, and basically we don't spend a lot of time at the counter. You hand it to me. You can give me some guidelines as to colors to avoid and so on, or the feel you're after, and then you say, give me a call when it's ready, and you walk out.
I kind of did that with the Jimi Hendrix thing that you did for me.
You did. You just gave me the materials and said, make it cool, and we did.
And it turned out great. It's hanging in the house right now.
Well, the savings to be realized by doing that are Trust Me sale. If I have to order in materials, it's a straight 20% discount off of whatever the retail would be. If I happen to have things that are completely appropriate on hand, it's 30%. And so it's been working out well. I haven't had anybody sorry that they used it yet.
All right. That's enough plug for Bowman's Framing.
Okay.
So what we're going to do, I'm going to try to take the same tact that I have with all the other council candidates that we've done podcasts with. You are now number 8 that we've done these with. You are a veteran as well. You did this in 2014.
I did.
The podcast. You actually wrote an op-ed for us in 2014 as well as a op-ed in 2016. So I want to give the listeners a little insight as to how I know you. So when I was coming up, and we haven't talked about this yet,
No. So
you don't know what's coming.
No, hit me.
But so when I was at Highlands in my first journalism class ever, we were tasked with selling yearbook ads.
Okay.
Do you remember this at all?
I honestly do not. Did I buy?
You did.
Okay.
You did. I was your sales rep.
Okay.
And I just remember you wanting a picture of something specific in your gallery. So I went and took the picture, and we put that in the yearbook. So you gave me my first ad sales experience.
Well, that's exciting.
I appreciate that. Okay. I think you might have had a mustache then.
Yeah, I had a period where I did wear the mustache. Yes, I did.
And you were a little bit darker at that point.
Less gray.
Less gray. Yeah. When did the gray happen?
I didn't note it. It just kind of, you wake up and there it is.
Is it because you're on Fort Thomas City Council?
I think it seems to accelerate it quite a bit.
Is that right?
Yeah, from election day forward.
Well, let's start there. So why do you want to run again?
I have, a fairly long history of volunteer service. I did 9 years on the Renaissance board before running for council, and that's why I stepped off of Renaissance. I thought I could have more impact on council. And it's basically a pretty pure desire to serve motivation. I have no ulteriors. I don't expect to gain anything from it. As a matter of fact, I lose by doing it. But I just, it's a community service thing. And I also, truth be told, anybody that does this thinks their opinions are pretty good. And so I like to be a part of the process and put my two cents in where I can and try to work for an outcome that I think is just or makes sense.
So obviously you said, and I always say this too, I think politicians generally think that they wouldn't run if they didn't think that they had good ideas.
Absolutely.
And some of your good ideas, and I'm going to take some of these excerpts from your 2014 op-ed and just see, you know, what started there, what you wanted to get accomplished, and how far some of those ideas, you know, evolved.
Okay.
So one of the things that you talked about, and you weren't the only one, but, you know, a lot of council candidates in 2014 said, you know what? We got to get rid of this fence around the reservoir. It's been a community jewel for a long time. People like to walk around this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not privy to the conversations that happen internally. I just know what happens publicly. Obviously, that's been something that everybody seems to want to get done, and we haven't gotten anywhere with that.
We've gotten nowhere with it, and it's a really frustrating bunch of circumstances. When I do bring it up, and I can't say that I've revisited it since Ron has become our new administrator, but I should. But I've been told it's totally in the water department's hands, and our hands are tied, and we really can't push a decision from them, and there's homeland security issues. But it is it's a crying shame, and it makes, you know, I keep on approaching things from a common sense perspective, which is not always, doesn't always apply.
Why not?
But it's just the way things are designed. It doesn't apply. To me, if there was activity at the reservoir and that we had, like it used to be, walkers and dog walkers and bikers doing laps of those two pools of water, that provides a witness pool in case anything nefarious were to happen. And so, I mean, what's to prevent somebody from tossing a water balloon, you know, if that's what they're worried about, with some nasty chemical from up on the hill over the fence? I mean, at least this way you might have somebody that witnesses. But, you know, that's a common sense perspective, like I say, that doesn't, you know, really come into play.
So one of the things that I always try to think as what a good, you know, characteristic of a good city council person would be somebody that goes out and does independent research,
mm-hmm.
right?
That
doesn't necessarily, and we have great staff. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not nobody saying that we don't, but sometimes it takes a city council person to go out and independently check on those sources, right? So, you know, whether it's the water board with this issue,
right,
or speaking with experts on other issues, is that something that you try to prioritize, or do you generally just kind of sit back and say, you know, staff has studied this, this is what their job is, this is what we should do?
To be perfectly honest, I could and should do more of that independent research. If I don't like an answer that I'm getting from the administration, I should perhaps talk to the people that they say are responsible for the whatever it is that's not moving forward, and do a little more of that. And I realize that, and I probably should. On the other hand, a reason to not do that so much is if I've already gotten an answer from an administrative official, be it Ron or in the old days Don, and they feel I'm going behind their back and double checking information that they've given me, then that kind of can create an adversarial atmosphere internally, which I also don't want. And so if I've gotten an answer specific enough that they've talked to a specific individual and learned that we're at an impasse, it's a little tough sometimes to then go and have a conversation with that individual without, you know, a fear of creating,
sure,
a bad environment.
Well, let's talk about that, because you've been on council for two terms now. That's 4 years. You're seeking a third term. You've had experience with Don Martin and now with Ron Dill.
Yeah.
Talk about the differences in leadership between Ron and Don, and whether or not, I guess, you had a good relationship with Don and what you kind of hope to have with Ron going forward.
Okay. I'll be brutally honest. I'm much, much more optimistic about a brighter future for our city with the change at the top of administration. Everybody has their own personality traits, and Mr. Martin was a bit of a my way or the highway kind of a mentality, and really liked to drive the ship and didn't like any dissent or anybody even having a dialogue that was not what he had already predisposed as the outcome that he liked. And Ron is totally the opposite and very, very open-minded and open to dialogue. I'm thrilled so far with what we have with city staff and administration. I think that things are going to be getting a whole lot better, and things will happen a lot faster too.
So I remember in 2014, the residency requirement came up. Do you think that played into it? Because for people that don't know, Don Martin was not a resident of Fort Thomas. It was actually a requirement for him to be a city administrative officer in Fort Thomas. So I guess when he was hired, Mary Brown, who was the mayor at the time, just kind of told him, don't worry about it. Well, that was kind of a violation of our own rules and ordinances. Don Martin was able to get that changed. It was a 3-3 vote, Mary.
Well, and it not only – that's one of the worst periods that I can recall in my time serving on council, as far as I'm a big proponent of what's right, you know, and wrong is wrong and right is right and injustices and all that. But, I mean, that push to remove the residency requirement was not only for himself – but that requirement also existed for the police and the fire. And so when the changes were made and to remove that residency requirement, there was no discussion about any modification for any of the positions that what, for instance, might require that you have to live in a 20-minute commute. So, hypothetically, our fire chief could move to Westchester, and there'd be nothing to prevent that. So I wasn't in favor of just the broad stroke of, okay, no more residency requirement for these three positions, but that's how it went down. And once again, there was a lot of control and influence from Mr. Martin that drove the process. And anyhow, that's behind us. And so hopefully we can just look forward to better times. But
And you're saying so far all of your interactions with Ron Dill have been positive and good.
Have been very positive, and he's very responsive and very open-minded, and we can have conversations on a variety of topics. We used to have basically a policy in the days of Mr. Martin that prohibited, and this makes no sense, I might be saying too much here, but
it's a podcast. Nobody's listening.
Oh, okay, good. It's just you and me? Yeah. Cool. But there was a policy that existed that prohibited any city employees, which be it the police chief or police officers or fire department people, personnel, finance department, any city employees were prohibited from talking to council members. They didn't do it. They could get in trouble.
In trouble how?
In trouble. I don't know if it meant reprimands. And I know there were some reprimands for, individuals where the conversations had taken place. And how is a council person supposed to understand issues that involve employees without communication from somebody other than the administrator, ideally the employees themselves? So
like if
that's
you...
a policy that existed that shouldn't have. And so now I think that policy's gone and we're free. I mean, I can talk to the chief on the side or whatever.
So like, for instance, if like the heroin interdiction team, like mm-hmm. you wanted some information on, what we were doing, how we were doing it mm-hmm. Before, you wouldn't be able to go directly to the chief and say.
Right, and get the perspective of those that are heavily involved.
But now you are.
But now I am. And so, I mean, that
you feel like you're more effective that way.
Absolutely. I mean, I have more information from more perspectives, and I'm not just looking to our administrator to tell me what to say. A good example is when we had the attempted murder on Grand Avenue of the that kind of drove this whole gun controversy that we had at one point early on.
You're talking about Alicia Waters.
Alicia Waters, exactly, who's now paraplegic. Her husband, or estranged husband, acquired his firearm the day before in the afternoon at the local gun supplier. And the following day, you know, walks into the office setting and shoots his estranged wife and then takes the gun, turns it on himself. And I felt powerless as a council person. What can we do? These things are possible, but I wanted to take some kind of position. It was very controversial.
Sure.
But before I took any action at all, which I'm very limited of what I could do, I wanted the opinion of local law enforcement. What's your perspective on this? Do you think that, you know, if there were 3-day waiting periods, would it be a good idea? I mean, so who better to get an opinion from than our local law enforcement? I'm prohibited to do that. You know, I mean, so that's an extreme example, but still a good example nonetheless. There's times that you want to get a perspective from the people that most directly involved, who you might consider the experts in the particular topic.
And, you know, and to that point, your perspective is probably different than some, you know, who were on council at the time or who are on council now.
Mm-hmm.
But you represent a, you know, a specific voice in Fort Thomas that is actually probably a big voice, because you got the second most votes in 2014. Mm-hmm. You're an established business owner. You talk about being the most accessible council person, probably on council. Talk about that.
Yeah, there's no question. And it's double-edged sword. I don't mind it a bit, but I'm open 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. I'm open 9 to 2 on Saturday. And I have a walk-in business. And so several people that walk in don't necessarily want to buy a picture frame. They want to, you know, give me their points of view on whatever the issue is. And I think that's a good thing. Without question, I think I'm probably the easiest person to communicate with currently serving because of that position. Related to that, too, at one point, I had brought up in council that none of us have published email addresses on the website. And so I kind of drove that process too. So now we all have our @fortthomas.org addresses published.
Do you get emails to that one?
I do. It's not like a flood of them, but I'll get one a month, probably as an average from a citizen.
Tell me why you think that's important.
Well, I mean, we're representative of the population, and we should be free, freely accessible to them to bring us their concerns without necessarily having to show up on the third Monday at 7 o'clock in person at a meeting. It should be made convenient for people to be able to reach out.
To that point, and I agree with you, I think transparency across the board and everything should be occurring.
Mm-hmm.
It's too hard for people that are not familiar with the system like I am or you are to get information. Is there anything else that the city could be doing to make things more transparent for, you know, regular citizens?
I don't know that there is. I mean, we didn't used to have the archive either of our council meetings too, but now you can go to the website and you can watch the council meeting that just happened, and you can go back past council meetings and pull them up as well. So all of our public meetings are now archived and accessible, which wasn't the way when I first came on. So I don't know that we could do anything.
What about things that like aren't specifically council related? Like what about, you know, finance reports or, you know, our register, how we're spending money? I know a lot of cities go to that extent of publishing everything because at the end of the day, you know, it's not the city's money. It's not your money. It's not my money. It's our money.
Right. And I honestly am not familiar if other cities put that out there and where you can click on a budget and you can see the line by line.
Do you see any reason not to do that?
I don't know, other than if we did, I might see a reason not to do that. I mean, some people with too much time on their hands might choose to micromanage and then tie up processes by questioning expenditures, particular line items, line by line. We have open records. If somebody wants to know, they can
sure
request and get the information. But if we put it out there as a easy point and click option, I think it could really throw a logjam in some processes at times. So it might be counterproductive. I'm all about transparency and open records. It's all good, but you have to look at it from both perspectives too. I, as a council person, sometimes am frustrated that an action is required, a vote on a particular item that we haven't had adequate time to research and weigh in on, where it may have been reviewed by committee and then it's in front of us. That's probably going to change some too. I'm going to see what I can.
You're talking about like when things go to a commission or something that has appointed members mm-hmm. that are working for the city,
or even if it's a staff researched item that we might have in our packet the day of the meeting, and it might be not anything earth shaking or whatever. But I would like to see some of these items presented to us more in advance. So this is an ongoing process that we're looking into, and just so that we have time to review and vote intelligently, as opposed to just following a staff recommendation.
So like one thing that brings to mind that you bring that up, like, was that, yeah, it was 2015. Adam Meyer was still on city council mm-hmm. and he brought up the fact that he didn't want to necessarily take the full compensating rate on the property taxes. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point where, you know, he had done a lot of research independently, and I think it was like a 4-2 split vote or something like that. We ended up taking the full amount, but some of the pushback that he got at the time was, if we don't take this property tax rate right now, then we're going to have to re-advertise. We're going to have another public hearing. Right. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about?
That's exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about. Very much so. I would have liked to have more time to study the issue a little more comprehensively instead of having a, you know, such a fast process of decision-making on something that big. And it isn't, I mean, that particular tax rate, it wasn't that big as far as impact to the homeowners here. It's not that significant. The Fort Thomas tax is a small part of your tax bill. The city tax portion, but when we revisit this, I might not vote the way I voted. It depends on what our position is at that time. So I would hope to have more time to analyze it before
sure
plopping the vote down. That's a good example.
Yeah, and to his point though, I think he was saying that, and to go a little bit further into the property tax thing, he was saying, you know, we do such a good job at budgeting conservatively. We always have a surplus. Why not, you know, give the taxpayers a break?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said that in 2015 when the proposed budget for 2015-2016 came out. And the pushback that he got was, well, what happens if we have, you know, an emergency or a peering that we have to do or a bad snowfall?
Right, I know.
We had two emergencies, road emergencies with peering.
Yes.
I don't think we had much of a snowfall issue, and we're not going to have much one going forward because of the snow dome.
We're in good shape on salt. Yeah.
But everything that he said was going to happen happened. You know, mm-hmm. we budgeted conservatively. We came in under budget, and revenues were up.
Yeah. And it could have gone the other way. But even if it went the other way and we had a significant expenditure, we were, I'd say, in a position to handle it without too much of a hurt. There's some things on the radar. We're doing the comprehensive plan now. And so we might be happy that we've got the surplus we have for some of the things that we're talking about, you know, down the road, being in a position to do as
sure.
Future amenities.
I'm going to read something from your 2014 talking about log jams and mm-hmm. being frustrated. This is from 2014 that would still be pertinent today.
VA Homes, no.
That is it.
Oh, is it?
Okay. he just burst my bubble, but I'm going to read it anyway. One of the most important and frustrating issues that has been before us would be the 10 vacant Alexander Circle homes in Fort Thomas, which are known as the VA homes. This would eventually be a fantastic development, but we've been in a bureaucratic logjam. You like that word, logjam.
Yeah.
With the federal government. We hope to have this project underway and out for bid in the upcoming year. We have made some progress from that. We have a preferred developer, which is Bloomfield Sean. They have exercised their right to an extension. I think they had 12 months June 1st.
Exactly. They had 12 months from June 1st, and then that contract called for a two available 90-day extensions should we decide to grant them.
Which brings us into November of this year.
So they got an extra 180 days. We voted on that a couple of meetings ago to grant them both 90-day extensions. Council individuals are not really engaged in that process with the developer or the VA. That is at an administrative level, and I know Ron is all over it and would really like to grease the wheels and get this thing going. So I am a little more optimistic since they've got, you know, that limited time window to get this done. We're basically expecting, I would say, or I can't speak for everybody else, but I would expect Bloomfield Shone to come back to us with what they say, hey, this doesn't pencil out right. We're going to have a shortfall of X to make this make sense as a development to where we're going to be made whole and make it a profitable, worthwhile thing. And the city is going to have some skin in the game. And they're going to
Do you think they're going to?
I believe that I think that we have to. I think it's going to be the only hope. And whether that is just through general services, digging trenches for infrastructure, a lot of the skin in the game might be through, you know, our general services personnel's contribution to the project. We don't know what to expect yet, but there's at some level, especially the longer you wait, the more it's going to cost. At some level, the city's going to have to participate in some way. And so I think we fully expect to hear that from the developer.
So here's where I think that this whole crux of this thing comes down is, okay, if the city is to put skin in the game, mm-hmm. are those properties, those 10 properties or 12 if they develop new locations, are those 10 to 12 properties important to the city enough to where they are subsidizing 10 to 12 individual homeowners down the line? And that's the decision, I think, that the council has to make.
It is a decision we have to make. We have to see.
What do you think?
I think it would make sense in the long term if our skin in the game was not too excessive. But they're going to be very valuable, some of them riverfront homes that are going to have high assessments. It's not going to be like an HOA type of development. We're going to have a maintained city street and tax revenue from these properties when they're occupied, and they're not going to be cheap properties. And so from the perspective not only of numbers and tax revenue coming in once they are developed, but quality of life and appearances sake too, that would just be such a shame to see those things just fall apart or have to get knocked down and turn it into a, you know, an extension of the park or some other purpose. They're historic, prime, beautiful pieces of real estate that somebody should be living in.
And are falling apart.
And they're totally falling apart.
I just had somebody send me a picture of them.
With the crime tape up and all that.
Well, yeah, well that, but like, I think even within the last couple of days, one of the homes has deteriorated. Like, I think maybe the
chimney.
Something had fallen, which is sad.
It is sad. It's really sad. It's very sad.
This is a question we asked you in 2014. I'm going to ask you the same question, ask you to answer it now. If reelected, obviously this year, what will you prioritize for the coming 2 years of Fort Thomas legislation?
One thing that I've been meaning, I've brought up in the past and haven't brought up recently, and it's more of my common sense perspective, cul-de-sac and side street speed limits, we need to look at that. And that's been shot down every time I've brought it up.
In the past
administration, well, Don would always say we could do studies and set up speed monitors on certain streets. And I'd rather approach it from a perspective of, hey, let's talk to the homeowners on that street and say, do you think you're okay with 25 going down your cul-de-sac?
Well, who's
going
to say no to that?
And then they say, well, nobody pays attention to the signs anyway. And so that argument makes no sense. Well, why have any signs then, you know? And so a combination of a lower speed limit and children at play type signs on some of these side streets is, you know, like I say, it's common sense again. So I'm really hoping, and I plan on revisiting that soon. This is something that just has to be talked about in a common sense kind of a way. And whether, like I say, I'm going to have to probably refer it to the safety committee meeting, and I'm not on that committee, but I would attend. And I think we should all attend. That should probably be a committee of the whole discussion. But it's just, like I said, it's a really high on my agenda. And I live on one of those little cul-de-sacs that kids pop out from behind the parked cars on, and I watch cars flying down my street. And it's not just mine, though, but I happen to live on one with a lot of kids. And it's just stupid.
Well, I remember Mayor Brown, when she was still mayor, had said that at one point that was a parent's issue.
Uh-huh.
Do you agree with that?
Absolutely not. And I thought that was I won't go into what I thought that was, but yeah, I don't believe it's just a parenting issue. I mean, that's what one of the things we love about this town is the fact that you can let your kids play on your street and not, you know, have to micromanage every second of their playtime. And so, no, I don't agree. I think that we need to visit it street by street and, you know, talk to the residents too. And I, you know, if it was put to some kind of individual street by street referendum, I feel 100% confident that we'd have easily 90% support from every individual street to say, yeah, let's put up some signs, reduce the speed limit, drop it down 10 miles an hour and put up children at play signs and, you know, report violations and so on.
A lot of things, I'm going to flip gears on you for a second.
Go ahead, flip.
A lot of the decisions or action items that happen on council, most of them happen at a unanimous clip, 6-0. What's more important to you, building a consensus among that council or having a healthy debate, which may sometimes lead to split votes?
I absolutely would say the debate is more important. Things should be individually analyzed case by case. And if you do have a consensus, it's always great. There's no contention. Everybody gets along. It's all beautiful. But I think the dialogue is more important than studying the issues individually and having some conversation about it. A lot of these, you're right. I mean, most of our votes are unanimous, but most of our votes are not over anything that's really, you know, super impactful. We have to vote on a lot of things. And so there's a lot of unanimous votes, and a lot of those are kind of no-brainers. But at times, a healthy dialogue is important.
So where do you think – I go to the council meetings. I go to the committee meetings too.
Yes.
Where do you think most of the consensus building or discussion is taking place? Do you think it's happening at a council level in front of the public, or do you think it's happening –
I would hope it is. I know in my particular case it is. I don't have a lot of dialogue or talk about a lot of city-related issues to other council members outside of that meeting setting. There are rules about that, which I follow and respect the process. So I think most of it really is either at committee level or at the council meeting, but in a recognized proper setting. It's not at, you know, the midway with five of us getting together and, you know.
Well, not five, but yeah. I think probably – my opinion, which my opinion doesn't count for much.
Sure it does.
But my opinion is that, you know, there's no way that you would get all these consensus votes, unanimous votes, if some of this stuff was not being talked about, you know, in a private setting, whether that.
Yeah, and I don't like to think that that would be the case. It may be the case, and I might not be privy to those conversations. I might be the outsider from those conversations if they do exist.
You don't get invited to the smoke-filled rooms?
I don't. And so I haven't witnessed that, and I would hope that's not really happening.
Let me talk about your experience. You talked about your experience on Renaissance Board. Uh-huh. You've also been involved with Merchants and Music from the start.
I named it.
You named it.
I named it.
What else? What was a name what is another name that you were considering?
There wasn't any. I mean, I'm kind of good at thinking up these silly things. But as soon as the concept was discussed and then really starting to move forward, it hit me. I'm thinking merchants and music and, yeah, merchants and music. So it hit me really quick. So there weren't a lot of other ones that were considered. It was like, okay, that nails it. There it is.
Do you think like starting things like that kind of sets you apart a little bit?
I don't know that it sets me apart. It was a whole lot of work and a whole lot of, I don't know, enthusiasm or will to make it happen. I mean, just a ridiculous amount of work. And it's not all me by any means. I mean, we had a really good committee, and Jody, and back in the day, Rick Warner was instrumental in starting the whole Merchants and Music thing
Jody
too.
Robinson is now the economic director in Bellevue.
She's the assistant city
Yep.
administrator and Main Street manager
There
in
you go.
Bellevue. Yeah, and then she's got some other positions too. But anyhow, yeah. So she was our Main Street manager at that time, and we had the opportunity and the connections with Pure Prairie League. One thing led to another. It turned into a really good concept to follow up on. And whatever it is, 14 years later, it still is. So it's evolved, and it used to be, about the Main Street businesses strictly, period. And so it's gotten bigger, which is good. I mean, it brings in a lot more people. We've opened, or I can't say we. I've been uninvolved for the past 3 years or four. But the criteria to participate as a merchant has evolved into being a little more open than it was in our initial concept.
Obviously you're on a council. What are the committees that you're on, the three committees that you're on? I've got a list of it. Actually, I'll tell you right here. I've got my list right here. You are on utilities, public utilities.
I
You're the
am.
chair of public works, and you're also on recreation.
That's correct.
Let's talk about utilities, because
Okay.
there was that one only meets once every
I think we met once ever since
once in 10 years.
yeah.
And you guys met to talk about the contract with Duke Energy and the franchise fees,
Right.
and you approved a measure that would allow you to raise or lower the franchise fees if you so choose at your discretion,
That's correct.
which, if you did choose to do that, it could be one mechanism to replace the way that we do
Street
the street
assessments. Yep.
assessments.
And I hope we have more conversation about that, and I might initiate more conversation about that. I would advocate maybe a hybrid, where we might still have the individual property assessments to the affected residents, but at a lesser level. And so if we do that,
What's the split right now?
right now it's 50-50, unless you're on a main drag like a Highland Avenue or a heavily trafficked,
North Fort Thomas or South
yeah,
Fort Thomas?
then it could be 60-40 if it's like a state route or, well, no, not state route, I'm sorry, but if it's a heavily trafficked section,
Thoroughfare in Fort
thoroughfare,
Thomas. Yeah.
then it could be 60-40, where the 60 is to the city and 40 to the property owner. But I mean, we could revisit it in any different number of divisions. Whether
Have
that
you
be
paid
seven.
an assessment on your street in a while?
I haven't, and it needs it, and I
Do you
chair that
want them?
committee. But in mine, I'm at the center of a cul-de-sac. I've got 30 feet of frontage, so lucky me, 286 feet across the back, but only 30 in the front.
See, yeah, I think that's the biggest discrepancy to me
Oh, it's
is,
bad.
you know.
There's a case. There was one individual property owner that had one of the largest assessments to them that I've seen. That wasn't for road frontage; it was for road rearage. Their backyard had an expansive
Frontage,
distance
yeah.
frontage, but it's rearage, whatever you
Rearage,
want to
yeah, there you
call it.
go.
It abutted an improved roadway for quite a few feet, and so anyway, they got hit pretty hard for their backyard.
Well, and one of the things, and I sat in on those committee meetings, and one of the things that disturbed me the most, because in Fort Thomas you can do this, right? Like on specific instances, the one that you're talking about, I remember people that were in that meeting. They knew that property owner. And they had said, and you didn't say this, but it was somebody else in that meeting said, oh, well, they can afford
Well,
it.
that is just wrong again. I mean, whether they
But
can or
you can
not.
do it in Fort Thomas because we're in a small enough community where you feel like you know your neighbors. We're actually a bigger community. I mean, we're the
16,000 plus, yeah.
16,000 plus, we're the most populated city in Campbell County,
Right.
but that's the type of thing that I look at and I think, you know, that's troubling.
That's
Because,
really, that's very troubling.
yeah, because you know it that's a that's a it doesn't matter who lives there, it doesn't matter who's being assessed. You have to look at fairness, and I don't think my personal opinion here, which again doesn't matter that much, but my personal opinion is if your neighbor is paying a fraction of what you're paying for the same benefit, it's tough to swallow.
It is tough to swallow. And nobody wants their utility bills to go up either. But, if we do visit the franchise fee, it would, again, everything adds up, but it would be a very small hit on everybody to share the burden.
Yeah.
What
I'm going to let you wrap it up, Ken. What do you want people to know about you? And what do you hope that they consider when they see your name on the ballot?
Okay. I'm not somebody who likes the process of politics or campaigning in any way.
So you don't like doing this?
Oh, I really, really do not like doing this or anything related to this. I'll sell you a frame or I'll sell you a house or whatever, but I don't like to sell myself. I'm not a big fan of the process. So don't expect to see a whole lot of yard signs. You won't see any. Just know that I have a sincere desire to serve the community and would like to continue doing so.
Well, Ken Bowman, you can see his former op-eds on ForThomasMatters.com. There's a 2016 election tab at the top. You read that. If you Google simply 2014 Ken Bowman for Thomas Matters, you'll be able to read his op-ed. I'll try to get that in there in the podcast article that we publish. But Ken, thanks so much for being on the show.
Okay, I appreciate everything you do.
And we'll talk soon.